hard to love me, but trust me, I can take you places that you ain't never been. Put you in purple labels in that Vera Wang. Get your name engraved on the wedding ring. On everything, I'ma love you better more than I ever did. See, baby girl, listen, since you've been here with me, can't even lie, see the rider in your ambition. Try to provide and be the fire when you wet and dripping. Mommy, if you see a different, go ahead and get it. And I ain't saying if you leave me, it'd be better. But me and you together, honey, we could do whatever. I made it hard, I admit it, it's true. I need to hear some, I'm listening, boo.
Submit to a heart and speak for sure that things improve. I'm prepared to take it there for you. Cause I've been keeping nervous. Ain't no purpose, constant chest pain. It's amazing, but it ain't enough. Let's keep asking, I'm staying around for one. Who shares infinity? Rewind the way, remind us of what it is. Oh,
I know I'm hard to love. That's right. Besides all the games that I was kicking at first, it's time to explain my mind's been in reverse. But now I think back, when nobody cared, and you was there just to roll by your man. It came back, even though what I did, I realized and I'm aware, I know what it is. Put that on everything, girl, you my everything. I don't know where I be, cause you the air I breathe. If loving you wrong, then who could be right? I wouldn't know what to do without you in my life. You're more than me than the world, I pray. More nights for your heart to ache. So right in the middle of the dawn of day, I think all the pain I caused and throw it away and say,
oh, you're my life, you feel it in your soul.
You make it so damn hard. You make it so damn hard for me to love you.
I know it's hard to love you.
Jam in there. Hey, Diddy, featuring Mary J. Blige, and welcome everyone to the Soul 70 Show, featuring your hosts, Eric M. Black, Q Lynn Green, and Tiffany Hamilton. Hey, good evening, gang. How are you?
I'm fine. Ain't no Tiffany on. You trying to make her part of the show? She's not on the show. Well, she's supposed to. I think she hit me up earlier. She's going to be on, but she's not on the show.
Okay.
What's up, Will? What's up, Ian?
You could have faked it, you know, Q Lynn.
What's up?
I could have did that, but she's not on, so okay. It's been weird.
Okay.
Come on, but.
EB.
Anyway.
You see what we have to
do?
You already know what we have to deal with, right? Q Lynn. Oh, my goodness. Oh.
What you have to deal with. What?
Absolutely. I've already told the audience, look, we don't sign off any of the language that you use on your program, okay? CUW do not condone the language that comes out of Q Lynn's, Green's mouth, okay?
There you go. Already starting up in front of company. We have a special guest on and you already starting up before this. We ain't even got a good minute into the show yet and you already started. Let's just bypass Will just a second. And we have a special guest on. He's a veteran musician. I just was looking up his. I've been following him for a while, but it was like I didn't know all of this information. Like he just has a wealth of knowledge, and he's just from what I see, just a very respected musician, a 34-year musician. Bio is very long, and I'm just honored that he's on the show. Welcome our guest. Y'all give a special welcome to our guest, Monty Croft. How are you doing,
hey,
sir?
Hey, I'm doing very well. This show is wild already. I'm feeling.
I know, right? Our producer that, once you get familiar with the show, it's a whole lot of backstory to it, but we're going to bypass that because it's about you. We just gonna ignore everything, but we'll get to you, man. You have such a rich. I don't know where to start. I'll just for my questions. I'll start back to your upbringing in terms of the how you became, I guess, your ear for music and how it progressed for you being a musician and the music that was going on during the time when you were getting into music. If you can, like, kind of paint a picture of your experience and how you got into music.
Yeah, I could do that. Before I do that, I want to just mention that I worked with P. Diddy this year. You just played a cut with him on it.
Yeah, I forgot to mention. Yeah,
right.
This whole show, we're paying homage to, I call him the evangelist. Now he says Brother Love, even though he was playing.
Brother Love.
I call him the evangelist, Brother Love Combs, but go ahead.
No, I was in the studio with him. He was doing the theme for his documentary. The theme song, and for some reason he got this idea that he wanted vibes on the track. So through different channels, he got in touch with me, and I went to the studio, and Wiz Beats came in. That's not really, you know, my world, right? So I didn't know what I was going to see. But Diddy, man, he's very warm, very nice brother, very, like, respectful. And, you know, it's his world when you're in that world, but he's not barking orders at anybody, but you can feel everybody's kind of like ready to do whatever he wants them to do. But he's very cool with it, and I really respected that. He was respectful of my time and the way he dealt with me. He had trouble, like, communicating, like, what he really wanted, and he wound up not using the track on the documentary, which I was kind of disappointed. But, that was a great experience, and, you know, I give big thumbs up to, what is it, Brother Love? He's Brother Love now?
Brother Love.
Yeah,
he said it was a
Puffy.
Joke, but, right. I'm going to call him Puffy. That's what I've been known as, Puffy. So
yeah,
Puffy,
that's what most people were calling him that night. They call him Puff. And,
man.
Swiss Beats had more of a Brother Love vibe. You know, he came in, he was like the spiritual cat. He's a peace be unto you, my brother. Like that. And I heard that brother just graduated from Harvard, or he's about to graduate from Harvard, so.
Wow.
Yeah, I have to do that, so I'm, like, really impressed with that. But, yeah, that was a good experience, man. I really enjoyed that. That was something different. That's not my usual environment.
Man, right. You telling that story just alluded to so many questions. You just keep adding on questions. It just keeps popping in my head. That's such a great story.
Feel free, you know.
Right. Your sound, I wouldn't just limit it to jazz because I feel like you're a well-rounded musician in different genres. I wanted to know, like, just from your upbringing, what was it that, like, I guess musically, that made you musically inclined, that, or was it just you, like, being, like, just really indelved in the music, or was it, like, simultaneously with you, like, being indelved with the music and then wanting to play music during your childhood?
It was in my spirit, you know, that's the best way I could put it. It was just something that excited me about music, or even just seeing an instrument, you know. We used to go to stores, and I just would just stare at the guitars and the drums, and, man, it was just the most beautiful thing in the world to me. So I was just a natural gravitation toward everything musical, you know. So I started on drums. I was about 10. You know, I started taking lessons, and that led to the vibes. And then we got a piano in the house, so I started teaching myself that. And, you know, back when I came up, you know, I grew up mainly in the late 60s and through the 70s was really when I was growing up. And back then, you know, the stand-up groups, that was a big thing, you know, with choreography and falsetto singer and the whole nine. So everybody had a group, so I had a few of those. So we would rehearse like 1,000 times for one little show, you know, and it would be a variety show that we wouldn't even get paid for, but we would go out and get clothing for it, costumes or whatever, and we put our whole heart into it just because we loved it so much. And we piece our little harmonies together from what we heard, you know, because back then none of us really had any background. We weren't really church boys. None of us were church boys, so we didn't even have the advantage of that, you know. We were just kind of going by what we heard. But that was the big thing, our groups, you know, and getting into variety shows and, you know, having a girl scream for you, that kind of thing. And then on the other side of it, you know, I was practicing the drums, like, on a daily basis and played in a, you know, in a few bands. My first professional gigs, I was about 14. I started playing with this little trio with this older woman named Hermae Morton. It was kind of a jazz trio, but I played drums and we also sang. It was three of us and we all sang together. So that was my first experience playing. And, you know, just a lot of stuff in school, like people do school. I was in marching band. I played snare drum. We out there, you know, dancing and playing drums with this high school band. And, you know, that's basically how I got started.
And in terms of, I guess, the music that you said, 60s, you grew up in the 60s and 70s, what was it that, could you tell, like, the climate of where music was of, like, okay, of you said you, of you playing in bands, and was it a was you just was this the move or just was it you was it I guess I'm trying to say, for the bands back then, did you have to play a certain way or was it just whatever felt natural?
Well, our environment was you know, I grew up in all black area. I went to all black schools, so you know, the big thing, that was the funk era. You know, the 70s, that's when, you know, George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic was real. You know, I'm from Ohio, Youngstown, Ohio, and anybody from that area of the country will tell you, like, the Funkadelic was, like, the supreme band of all. I mean, you talk to somebody to this day, something about Youngstown, Ohio, they just really got a thing for Funkadelic, George Clinton. So that was it. You know, we all played funk, basically, funk, soul, R&B. You know, I was born in 61, so, you know, like, my growing up was really in the meat of the 70s, you know, so it was Earth, Wind, and Fire, you know. Before that, it was the Motown thing, and, you know, the Jackson 5 was really big with us because we were, like, their age, and that was the first time, like, seeing some kids our age of that caliber, you know, and being produced with that level of production and arranging, you know, so that, like, really blew our minds. So that made us really believe that we could do it, too, once we saw the Jackson 5. So it was the Motown thing, it was Sly and the Family Stones, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Philly International, and that's all the stuff we were playing. You know, back then, so many records were being released that your whole set would be new music. You know, if you played music from 2 years ago, that was some really old music. As opposed to today, when you have a cover band, almost, you know, the bulk of what they play is old music, you know. Because, you know, that's what's hot today, you know, to look back. But back then, it was just, people were putting 2 and 3 albums out in 1 year. So we would just, you know, our whole night would be new music. We might go back a year or two, and that would be it. But, you know, that was the environment then, you know. It was the, you know, the funk era, and like I say, the stand-up groups, Temptations, Blue Magic, Dramatics. So all of us, we learned choreography, you know. I used to choreograph the groups and like that, you know. It was a lot of fun, man. It was a great time to come up.
Man, this is good stuff. This is great.
What age was it for you, or that you were, like, saying, like, okay, I'm going to do this, like, full-time, or just, or that you were going to do this for a living, I guess I should say?
Yeah. Well, that seed was sown pretty early, but it was not encouraged. You know, my parents weren't really down with that whole idea, so they didn't stop me from, you know, practicing and doing the things with the groups and doing the little variety shows. But they didn't really encourage it either. So it was a little rub. It was like a little friction with that, you know. So by the time I graduated, or graduation was coming up for high school, you know, I had a dilemma, you know. It's like, okay, what do I do now, you know, because I wanted to go to college, but I wanted to stay in the music. So luckily I had a friend who was my band director. He had just gotten out of college himself. So he was very young, so we were really tight. And I know this dude to this day. We're good friends. So he suggested, well, why don't you go to a music school? Check out Berklee College of Music. So that's all I had to hear because I didn't know about anything else. You know, and I did my little research and said, okay, that's in Boston. No, it's not that far. It's not like going to L.A. or something, you know. So that's what it was. I went to Berkeley, and, you know, I just wanted to test the water and see what it was. And when I got there, that was another mind blower, because there, unlike myself, I met kids who were encouraged in the and it's a big difference, you know. It was discouraging in a way, you know, because, you know, you had these kids who were trained from the time they were like 5 years old to be musicians. You know, there was no fight about it in their household. So that was a big adjustment for me. But luckily my peers in that Berkeley experience, they were very encouraging. They saw some talent in me. They saw potential, even though I wasn't trained on the level they were at that point. Because like I said, they were like some of these kids were highly trained from the time they were little kids, you know. So that, even though I was discouraged at first with seeing the level of talent and skill, I was encouraged that they saw something in me and they were very supportive. So that set me on a path to college. And then I left. I didn't finish because some of my friends were already going to New York and establishing careers. I had learned enough in the music school that what I needed now was just some time to consolidate it, to work on it, and pursue the music, you know. And I decided, again, I was going to stay on the East Coast, go to New York, get a job, and, you know, see what happens from there. And that's what I did. In 1983, I moved to New York, and I've been here ever since. You know, I got a job at ASCAP. Kind of music related, you know. I was identifying tunes from the radio and television. That's the first step. People to get their money, you know, for publishing, songwriting, what have you. That was my job, to write down the songs I heard on the radio. So I did that for a couple of years. And in the meantime, I was hanging out at night, you know, trying to make connections and sitting in at various jam sessions around town. I was touching base with all my friends that I knew that were already in New York. And, you know, it just kept going from there.
Oh, man. I have so many more questions, but I'm going to let what we can do right here. My friend actually just texted me. I had to put my phone on mute because he just texted me. He said, yo, ask him about the Survival of the Spirit album. Like, he wants to, and I'm actually playing a song from that album. And so he just texted me that because he said he has the original copy of that
wow.
album.
Wow.
Of Survival of the Spirit. He said he has the whole thing, and he's from New York. He's from the Bronx, but he's a transplant in L.A. now. But he just texted me a minute ago. I'm like, I'm going to get to it. Hold on. But right now, if Will's ready, we're going to play a little bit of Monty Crop's song from his albums that was the album release, Beijing. You play it? Yeah.
Thank you.
Wow. Beijing, Mr. Marnie Croft from the Survival of the Spirit album. Hey, thank you for that. Hey, I hope Mr. Melody is listening.
Man, y'all went from Mary J. Blige to that jazz madness. You must be real music lovers.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Man, he had told me to look that song up. He actually sent it to me. My friend, he has it. He sent it to me through Dropbox because I hadn't heard it. And I was like, yo. And I think it was on YouTube as well. Somebody has it on. I think that's where I found
it
to where he could play
it.
Oh, yeah, you did?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, I found it. And then also, I was trying to, like, oh, my God. Everything you did, I wanted to, like, describe so well, like, how much you use that vibraphone. I know it says listed on the credits. Is, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. Mulgrew Miller.
Mulgrew Miller.
On piano, and Lonnie Plexico.
No, wait. No, Mulgrew was not on that cut.
Oh, was it? He was on piano?
See, I did two albums for Columbia. Mulgrew was on the first album. That song.
Never. No. I'm reading the wrong credits. It's from A Higher Fire. That's where that one's from. I'm reading the wrong one. It's from a different. I forgot what song it was. I'm looking it up on here. Yeah, it was. It's from your High Fire. That's my bad. That album, though, oh, my God. I mean, that song that we just played, what you did with that vibraphone, and even in the beginning, the intro, I hear a lot of that, of the percussion. I hear that on, like, new jazz artists now that do that. It's specifically with Robert Glasper. He's experimented with percussion like that.
Right.
In his tracks. So, okay, go ahead, E.B. I'll say my question for later. Go ahead. I have so many questions.
And I just want to mention, if I could, since we brought up Mulgrew Miller, I just want to say piano player on that cut was Bruce Barr, a New York.
Bruce Barr. Okay, yeah, that's what it was. I had the wrong credit.
Right on.
Bruce Barr. I got to look that up. Go ahead, EB. I'm just getting excited. Go ahead.
No, this is like on some personal stuff. I just found out today that you actually perform at the Sugar Bar sometimes. Ashford and Simpson's restaurant, uptown.
Oh, yeah, I'm there basically every week. Every once in a while, you know, we take off like we weren't there this week. But every Wednesday, you know, we hold court Wednesday night, and it's a lot of fun. I love playing at the Sugar Bar.
Yeah, because I'm in Brooklyn, but I work 4 blocks from the Sugar Bar, and I usually go on Thursdays for the open mic.
Right.
It's interesting to see that you're there. Yeah, open mic is. Yeah, it's always nice in there. So I'm going to have to
check
you out.
Yeah, man, come by on Wednesdays. Come in. Bring some friends, man. We're trying to blow it up because we got a real quality thing happening there on Wednesday nights. And we just got to get the word out. We've been there for a while. It's real up and down. You know, some nights good crowd, some nights not so great. You know, once in a while, Valerie will be there, which, you know, star power.
Yeah, I've run into her a couple times. So are you completely self-taught, like, when I know you said, like you just started, I think you said when you were what age did you got a piano in the house? What age were you?
I was probably around 14-ish, something like that.
Oh, and
drums. You know, I took drum lessons from the time I was 10 years old.
Okay,
say I'm self-taught in every aspect.
Right.
You know, I kind of taught myself the piano. That's why I got all these little jacked up fingerings, because you know, self-taught on piano. I didn't study the classical technique or whatever. But it's all good. It serves me well. You know, I went to Berklee College. You know, so there, you know, you study everything. You study the harmony, arranging, theory.
Oh, you polish it there.
Yeah, and you could apply that to whatever instrument you want. You know,
you have this unique ability. I know at the beginning of the show, you were saying how you were just in the studio with Puffy and Swiss Beat, and I know you've worked with Hubert Laws, who I love, and I just found out today that you actually worked with Liz Wright on one of my favorite songs that she has.
Ah.
Like, End of Time.
We did her first album.
Yeah, you know? I never knew that. One of my favorite songs. What do you think?
Yeah, she's a sweetheart. She's a sweetheart. And my friend Brian Blade was a co-producer on that with Tommy LaPuma. And I was playing in Brian's band at that time. So So he said, you know, come on and do this record day. We have this new singer. We think she's going to blow up. And, you know, we actually recorded more stuff that, again, they didn't use. You know, that happens a lot. You know, just like with Puffy.
Right.
You record stuff and they don't use it. So you get the experience, but the people don't get to hear it, you know, right away anyway. It might surface, you know, on down the road. But, yeah, for sure, Liz, right. That was a great experience. You know, I'm very happy for her career, the way it's going on.
Oh, yeah, it's going great. So with you work with, like, this wide variety and this wide range of people.
Yeah, man, I just worked with Gladys Knight.
You worked with Gladys?
I just worked with Gladys Knight.
What?
That was, like, the love of my life, one of the peaks of my career, man. I got to shake her hand.
Wow.
Tell her it was a dream come true, you know. I did that. We did a benefit for the Jazz Foundation, which is a great foundation in New York. They take care of the medical bills of different musicians, you know, mm-hmm. when they get infirm, you know. Not just the jazz musicians. They help, like, some of the R&B, soul musicians, blues, whoever, who needs a helping
right.
hand, you know, be it paying mortgages when you can't work anymore or just taking up your medical bills. You know, I have some personal friends who have utilized Jazz Foundation. So anyway, we did that benefit, and Gladys Knight was the guest of honor, and she performed a couple of songs, and I got to play with her, and I got to talk to her a little bit, you know. So it was like a dream come true. She's such a great singer, which everyone knows, but she's one of the warmest, nicest people I've
right.
ever met in show business. Absolutely, man. No ego whatsoever. Just totally humble and a lot of love.
What
she smiles at you like she loves you, you know.
What is that you think contributes to your ability to kind of move between worlds, like, you know, working with such a wide variety or wide range of people? Like, what in you or what is innate that you think helps with that?
Well, I think it goes back to what I was talking about earlier, my beginnings in the R&B world, and then touching on that jazz thing relatively early, too. Like, a lot of my friends I encountered at Berklee, they were really raised on that jazz thing. And I wasn't like that, because I didn't really know any jazz musicians growing up. You just don't find that too much in the part of the country I grew up. So I had the R&B thing, and I hit on the jazz thing, and when I went to Berklee, I got more and more interested in the jazz thing. But that never diminished my love for soul music. And I've kept
right.
it going ever since, you know, and I started playing a lot of keyboards. You know, even though I do the vibes, most of my gigs are, you know, I'm at the keyboard and I'm singing. Like, and when you come to the Sugar Bar, you check out that side. It's really more of an R&B vibe. And, you know, the short answer to your question is just love. I just love all the different styles. You know?
And so talk to me a little bit about the Average White Band. Like, how did you get started with them?
Their drummer, Rocky Bryant, is a friend of mine. And they needed somebody to come in. They wanted somebody to come in to replace a cat that was playing guitar, bass, and singing. You know, anybody out there that's familiar with the Average White Band, they had two main singers, Hamish Stewart and Alan Gorey. Alan Gorey is still in the band. Their guitar player, Arnie McIntyre, is still in the band. But Hamish hasn't been in the band for 20-whatever years.
Yeah,
Hamish sang all the high parts, all the falsetto.
Yep, yep.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's
sure
what they wanted me to do. But there was a problem. I don't sing falsetto. I can sing some pretty high natural notes, but I cannot do that falsetto. And
falsetto,
can definitely
right.
not do it all night. So I told them that. Listen, you got the wrong cat. Thanks for the offer. And I don't really, you know, I hadn't really played bass like that either. I mean, I play a little bass. But to hold the whole band down, you know, in these big theaters and whatnot, that idea was, you know, a little frightening to me. But Rocky said, listen, man, you could play this music because it's patterns, it's parts. And I had loved their music. So I knew a lot of it, and I thought about it. I said, yeah, man, I could, you know, I could play this, just make sure I practice. So that's what I wound up doing. You know, they had to hire a singer since I couldn't sing the parts, but they still wanted me in the band. So I wound up playing keyboards for the majority of the night. But I had to learn like 6 or 7 tunes on bass, and we would play 2 on any given night, 2 of the songs on any given night. And we did a couple of songs where I played guitar, which is actually an instrument I'm more comfortable with, you know, because I'm pretty serious about pursuing the guitar. But, you know, there just wasn't that much room for me to play guitar on that gig. But I got to do two songs with them on guitar. And, you know, it started out like a great experience because, like I said, you know, I love the music. And it was real cool in the beginning, but I think we had two different visions of what my role was going to be in that band, you know, because I had envisioned, like, having some creative input and, like,
right,
continuing on the road they had started back in the 70s. I still had that idea in my mind. But the original cast was like, nah, we just really need a cat to copy what
right,
we
right.
had back then. And we don't need your
they
personality.
They wanted to catch that feeling.
We don't need your personality in this music at all. So at first it was cool, but then it became a clash. As more and more we went on, you know, I just saw, okay, this is not going to work for me. I'm going to try to hold on to this as long as I can. Because they were working regularly, and it was a nice situation because we just went out on weekends, basically. You know, we never went out more than 2 weeks at a time in the whole time I was there, right? But eventually, mm-hmm. you know, the writing was on the wall. They saw it wasn't going to work because I'm a very spontaneous kind of creative person, and my input has to be in there. I can be in the average white band, but I've got to make some kind of mark that says, okay, this is different from what it was back then, but that's exactly what they didn't want. They wanted a carbon copy of what was done in the 70s. So, you know, we had to part ways, unfortunately.
I'm going to ask you one more question before I give it back to Q-Lynn. You said you were, you didn't even have to say you're a creative person. I can tell you're a creative person. We can hear it. How do you feed that creative spirit, or when do you feel most creative? Like, what inspires you?
Other artists inspire me. You know, certain song out here that'll inspire me. Hearing the way a certain person plays an instrument will inspire me. You know, and, you know, I still got that thing, that spark, like when I was a kid, man. I can look at a guitar and get a thrill from it, you know, just get that spark of, I want to play that, you know, or see a nice, well-crafted guitar or a grand piano, a Steinway,
right,
and literally get excited, get that feeling of, I want to do something with this. I want to play. I want to play. I want to do something. And, you know, that's it, basically. I mean, how can I not get inspired when, you know, I hear Stevie Wonder or, you know, Freddie Hubbard or whoever, you know, any of those names that people name through the history of the music or the present day, you know? And, you know, meeting somebody like Gladys or, you know, doing the thing with Diddy, you know, that adds a little spark to your life, working with Steve Jordan, being on television. You know, I was in a movie that's coming out on Christmas Day. You know, hopefully they left my scenes in. But, you know, all this, you know, it keeps you going. And, you know, my family is very supportive, my wife and, you know, my son, who's, you know, got some interest in music as well. He's been producing some tracks, and he just started college. So it's a nice little situation we got here. You know, I got a space where I can, you know, work out. I can play my drums and my vibes and my bass and my guitar and my harmonica, and I can sing late at night. So, you know, my life is good, you know.
Yeah, I think a couple more questions, and then we're going to let you go. With your two albums, you said it was under Columbia Records, right?
Right. That was when Columbia was hot, hot, hot. They were the biggest record company in the world back then.
So this was
right. I was going to ask, did those albums come out when they were getting ready to sell to Sony?
The deal was in the works, and
okay.
I have to go back and do my research. I think the second album was right before the change, or maybe during the change. But yeah, I was right there in that pocket where that was about to happen.
Wow.
The first record came out. First record, I'll tell you, go back in history. First record came out on vinyl. That was still like the main medium. That's how long ago that was. It came out on vinyl, CDs, and cassettes.
Yeah, that's what he said. My friend said he has the original vinyl of that. Like, he has it. I'm trying to get it for, I'm trying to like, yo, hook me up with that. And I got a musical plug that's like, I'm about to order your, it's a musical plug that lets me order your, Higher Fire album. I'm about to get that because I was trying to look for it. But yeah. Okay, I'm digressing. I'm getting, go ahead.
I don't think they did vinyl on the second record because that was right in that change too when they were shifting over to CDs. I could be mistaken, but I don't even think they did vinyl on the second record.
You know what? The place where I get vinyls from, they actually have it in, but it's overseas. It's not any in the States. I get mine from over, some of them I get from overseas, my vinyls.
I'll tell you.
Right.
Yeah.
I think one of them, the one that I'm looking at is from,
I'm just talking about the original release, you know, the original pressing back in the day. I remember all of a sudden there was no more vinyl on the second record. They had decided this was just going to be CDs, you know. So it was kind of like a funny time in history, you know. We were crossing over into something different. Not realizing how it would change again and again, you know, with the digital thing, you know.
Right. During that time period, what was it, did they know, due to your creativity as an artist, did they, prioritize your music? It's so weird when labels, like, when they have that awkward stage of getting ready to sell, because it feels like they, like, dump anybody that's there. It feels like they get new people, and they just completely neglect the people on the label. So was it sort of like that with
That was the way of the record business. I got to speak in past tense now because everything is different now. You know, there's so many more artists that don't get over than the ones that do. You know, of course, we always remember the recording successes, but the number of people who don't succeed, quote unquote, is just so much greater. I mean, it's no comparison. And unfortunately, I was in that large group. I mean, the records had kind of a cult following, and I've only found that out through the years that have ensued past that, you know, because not a week goes by where somebody doesn't mention, oh, I remember that record, I have that record, can you find that, can I still find that record? I mean, the records, they still have a life of their own all these years later, you know. We're working on 30 years, you know. So, I mean, that makes me feel really good. It makes me feel like we did something that had some substance and quality, you know. When I listened to them, I was like, I wish I could do that over. I wish I could sing that over. I wish I could do that a little differently. But, you know, every artist has those kind of feelings. But overall, I'm very proud, and I'm happy you connected with people. Getting back more to your question, I would say, you know, I was part of a quota. You know, A&R people, they have to sign so many people. So they didn't really know who they were signing. I mean, Dr. George Butler, he had saw me sit in with somebody, maybe Winton or maybe Terrence Blanchard, Donald Harrison, somebody. I don't know. I don't remember. But he called a meeting with me, and I was going to submit a demo to him, but he had already decided that he was going to sign me. But he didn't know what I was about. You know, he was just in that mind. He had so much success with Winton Marsalis. He just wanted to create other people in that mold. And I remember telling him, well, I don't want to be the Winton Marsalis of vibes, you know. So, yeah, I want to do some R&B music. You know, I sing. I had to fight him to get the vocal on the first record. And that's ironic because the vocal is what made some noise on that first record. You know, they had what they called the smooth jazz format. They had CD 101 in New York, and they picked up this tune called What Is Love. And that, you know, that gave the album some legs, you know. But I had to fight to get the vocal on the album because, again, he didn't really, really know what he was signing. He didn't know the full extent of what I could do. And unfortunately, we just did not have the support from the record company. It becomes like an internal battle within the company. You're fighting people who are supposed to be working for you. You know, and you can't predict how that's going to turn out or why that occurs, you know, because some of the stuff is, like, personal. There's a racial component sometimes, you know, as with everything in America. And, you know, I used to have some heart-to-heart talks with George Butler about that kind of stuff, you know. But, you know, he did what he could. And, like I say, the records live on. And I'm still out here doing my thing, so, you know, I'm happy.
I just have one. Man, I have so many questions. This should be like a two-hour show because this is, like, ridiculous. This would be 30 minutes long. This is crazy. I should have scheduled you.
Well, you know, we gotta I got get time. However long you want to go, I'm good, you know?
Man, I had a question specific because then when I looked up the credits for that one, well, it's hard to find those, but I found some. And with that, during that time period, I know Wynton Marsalis, like early 80s, I think all through the 80s, he was like releasing music. And I know he released one, I think, I forgot the specific year, but early 80s, I think he was on Columbia too, wasn't he?
Oh yeah. Yeah, he was the darling of the company. Because he was so successful. Once he did the classical records.
Right.
So that just put him, like, on another kind of level. So he started winning Grammys. And he was the darling of Columbia Records. So, like I say, Dr. George Butler, who was our A&R person, we shared the same A&R guy.
So I'm trying to figure out why.
He wanted to sign other guys molded after what Wynton was doing. And that it wasn't really friction with me, but I just had to let him know that I wasn't going to be the Wynton of vibes. I didn't want to be that. You know?
Yeah, it's like, oh my God, that record that I just heard is such like a hidden gem. Like when I tell you, that's sort of like the blueprint of some of these jazz. Like the meticulousness of the percussion. Like I hear that today, and it's like it just makes me think like what was those A&R like people that especially Columbia. Columbia's always dropping a record. Just to put off my little rant just a little bit, I'm still mad about them. They were getting ready to pass on Maxwell's album until D'Angelo dropped Brown Sugar. So they actually put it on the shelf for like a whole year until D'Angelo's record. Cause you know, the 90s, mid 90s, like hip hop and R&B was like merging. So like live instrumentation on records was like dated to them. So they didn't know what to do with it. But yeah, they shelved it. He was on Columbia too. So I was like, man, like your record, like it's the thing you would, like the main instrument to me that I hear throughout that record was the vibraphone, and that's like so like eclectic. It was from like you could have been like it's so crazy to me like how they missed the mark on that. It's just crazy like thinking back to
I hear what's going on. I appreciate that, but you know, it was a mega corporation. I mean, it was like. You're on the same label. I'll tell you what happened. They had this new artist. I walked into the jazz radio promotion person's office, and he hands me this CD of this new artist, and it was the company line that everybody had to make sure everybody knew about this new artist. That new artist was Mariah Carey. That was her first record.
Wow.
She was hooked up with Tommy Mottola at that time, who was one of the execs at Columbia Records. So here the jazz radio promotion person is handing me a Mariah Carey CD when I'm trying to get him to promote my record to radio. So that's the kind of stuff you were dealing with. And just to piggyback on that Maxwell story, I'll tell you one little thing. Like Dr. George Butler, who was my A&R person, his office was next to one of the R&B A&R guys, and we were all like really friendly. I used to hang out in George's office a lot, and I met this guy. His name escapes me at the moment, but people in the industry know this guy's name. He was listening to a demo, right? So he let me hear it, and the demo, it was killing. I mean, it was ridiculous. I mean, these harmonies were killing, the beats were incredible, and he passed on it. That artist was Brian McKnight.
Wow.
I was like, yeah, because I remember him telling me, yeah, this is the brother of one of the cats in Take Six.
Right.
Oh, man, I love Take Six. You got to sign this. This guy, this demo is incredible. They passed on him for whatever reason, you know, and Brian became what he became, you know, but there's got to be hundreds of stories like that.
Of course.
When you're dealing with those mega corporations, it's just so political and everybody's afraid for their job and, I mean, there's all kind of stuff going on. I mean, there's great advantages to it because nobody had distribution like Columbia. Like I said, it was the biggest company in the world. But, you know, it's like the disadvantage is politics within the company, you know. And I just got on the wrong side of it, you know. Nothing could be done.
Oh man, that is a crazy story. It's just mind-boggling because Wynton Marsalis, like, I'm like, that would make perfect sense for your record to be doing just as big because he was winning Grammys at that time. Like, he was like really popular then. And then also, the questions I was gonna ask, when was that age for you to where it was like, or I think did you already answer that with like, where you were comfortable saying you were a musician and you felt comfortable with like how you were progressing as a musician?
You gotta run that by me again? I didn't quite understand the question.
Like, what was that age for you to where you were comfortable saying, like, you're comfortable with how you're progressing as a musician?
I'm comfortable, well, I'm trying to still progress, you know.
Right.
You know, you don't have, it's funny, as you get older, you don't have that youthful energy and you don't have that as much fearlessness in a way. You know, with your ignorance of youth, kind of brave, you know, because you don't even know what you don't know at that point. And that works in your favor, I think, and definitely the energy. But, you know, when you get older, some of that dissipates. The energy definitely dissipates. You know, physically you're not the same. And you just don't know what direction it's going to go. But I would have to say I've been very lucky and that I've been able to maintain and keep getting better. You know, I mean, I just keep getting better, you know. Added more instruments as I went on, doing different kind of jobs, different kind of gigs, different bands, you know. It's been all good. I mean, I have, like, no complaints.
And I think this might be my last one. I have two more, and that's it. Man, we should have made this 2 hours. This is ridiculous. I should have. Well, I didn't know if you were going to be on for, like, I'm like, hopefully we can have him on for, like, a whole hour, but I'll change the trajectory of the show if you want me to, and we can do this, like, whole two-hour thing, but I digress. But anyway, my question was, I'm getting all off topic. I'm getting ADD. Okay, Sonny Rollins, I think a couple years ago, I forgot how long ago this was, he did an interview, excuse me, and he was basically saying how he's been doing yoga for 30, 40-plus years, and wow, how that helped him musically. And I remember, I think I had messaged that to you whenever you did a happy birthday post on him, and that was like the most profound interview I'd ever, like, I just read the transcript, and he was like how yoga, his spirituality, like, centered him. And I was like, I connected with that, like, meditation, because I'm a musician as well. Like, I'm just now comfortable, like, saying, the reason why I say that is because I feel like what he said was that he was still, like, even with, like, him being a legend, that he's always learning. And I was like, if he's still learning, I'm an infant. Because it's like, like, for somebody to be that big of a legend and still saying he's still evolving and learning, and that spirituality, like, helped him, like, intertwine with the music. And I 100%, like, connected with that, because that, when I really started, like, focusing my mind and, like, meditating, like, it really helped me, like, control myself when I'm playing and really focus on what it is I'm trying to get out of, like, playing a progression, like, chord progression, like, and figure out what it is I'm trying to do. So I wanted to know, like,
what instrument do you play?
I play multiple, like you do. I play the drums, I play the piano, the organ. I'm trying to learn, like you said, the guitar, bass. I want the bass to be my main instrument because I love it. But the drums right now, I play, that's my main instrument now, but yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, I wanted to know, what is it that, is there anything spiritual that you connect with that connects you to the music that helps you, like, focus in that way as well?
I feel I'm a very spiritual person, but it's kind of more trying to figure out what this existence is about, or assigning a meaning to this existence, you know, a reason for living, you know, reason to make my life meaningful, you know. And, you know, it just breaks down in daily life is just trying to be a good person, you know, and trying to spread a good feeling with people and having good humor. You know, I like to make people laugh, and I just like to make people feel good. And I like people who are really, like, real, you know. I don't like, you meet a lot of hustlers and con people in the music business and in life in general. And I've been seeing them all my life from the time I was a kid, so I know practically every game that's out there, you know. So I like real, sincere people, You know, I like people who can show some vulnerability. You know, I don't like people who feel like they got to be hard all the time. I hate that trend. You know, young people feel like they look hard. You know, even when they're not hard, they just feel like they got to look hard all the time. You know, I'm about, you know, that thing they call love. You know, love, giving, warmth, you know, sharing with people. And it's funny you should mention Sonny Rollins. I think he's a great role model because he's always tried to speak goodness, you know, and figure out what this existence is about as well, you know. And he took yoga on the deepest level, you know. I just did yoga for exercise, you know, which is nice too, you know. And that,
right.
And that helps keep my thing together as well. I've always been into fitness on some level. I used to run when I lived in Brooklyn. I would run around Prospect Park, you know, ride my bike. You know, since I moved, I'm in Queens now, and we have high ceilings in our basement, so I've been jumping rope, and I lift weights, and just trying to keep the physical, the mental together, and, you know, just really be a thoughtful person, you know, in terms, not just in terms of giving to others, but thoughtful in terms of figuring out what this existence is going to mean for me in my life, you know. I don't think there's any definitive answer about what this is, but each person has to figure out, if you're afforded the time to do it, which I have been, you know, what this existence means for me and what I'm going to give to this existence. Try to make it a giving thing, you know. That's part of what the music is about, giving people a feeling, you know, inspiring, making people feel better when they feel down, all those kind of things, you know. Making people move, making people dance. You know, all of it.
Right. I keep saying I have two more questions, and I'm serious. I only have two more questions, and then I'll let Will, I think Will has a question for you, and we'll wrap
me,
this
you
up.
Remind me of when I see Valerie Simpson, because I always have 1,000 questions for her. The last time I saw her, I said, listen, I have 1,000 questions for you, but I'm only going to ask you two every time I see you. So I'm trying to stick
to
that. So
I keep saying too, but it keeps popping in. I have so many. That's why we gotta do like a part two interview. This is that way more questions than this. But my two was, I read you dropped so many gems on Facebook, man, and it's like so parallels to like what's going on. Not just like musically, I mean the scene, but I think most of young musicians could like benefit from. Like most of the posts that you put on there, one of them, this was an old one that I pulled up. This one says, the things you're working on musically will manifest eventually if you're patient with yourself and you keep at it. Invest your time in something musically substantive, and it will pay dividends that no one will be able to take away from you. Who you are musically in this moment is temporary, and I've experienced this in my own life over and over through many decades now. Sticking to it is challenging, and sometimes you have to find new people for the new you. Your doubters actually don't deserve the new you, man. And and you have so many more. I wish I could pull up, but I think so many young musicians. I think another question I forgot to ask you was the reason why I asked your upbringing is because I feel like most of my mentors they were born in the I guess late 50s, early 60s. And so they grew up in that era, like you said, 70s. And so they were playing, like, you know, different bands or whatever. Some play in churches. But what they taught me was that discipline. And I feel like cats that grew up in the 70s that were musicians then that were working, they have, like, a different skill level when it comes to the discipline it takes to be a musician. And people think I'm picking on the young musicians all the time, but it's just they don't have any reference. I think with a listener of music today, they just don't have a reference to go to teach them stuff. And so I see a lot of young musicians that are on the internet, they like prioritize shedding or just, you know, making chops videos or whatever instrument they use instead of like creating something. Like if you're trying to get paid, you have to know pocket, and it's crazy to me. People think that, you know, doing a lot, you know, trying to solo on everything is going to get them a job. Like, them, like, having high views on social media is going to get them followers. And it's just crazy to me because I've always played pocket. And yeah. I feel like I'm confident in my ability. I know it's a lot of musicians better than me, but I know what I'm good at. And I know when I try to define what that pocket is, I know I'm good. And whatever I make, and the pocket can be inventive. It's just how you do that pocket. As long as you're not, whatever that song calls for, that's what I'm doing. And I don't try to take away from what the original record is doing. And it's a lot of remakes and a lot of things, but I just wanted to know in terms of like young musicians, do you feel like it'll ever be a balance to where they figure it out? Or is it, do you think that it's a lost cause, like trying to, you know?
No, it's never a lost cause, you know. And I did some teaching up in Harlem. We used to teach at this boys club. I did it actually for 3 years. It was kind of like a part-time thing. Like, I think we worked maybe 5 hours a day on the weekdays. And when I first started, I was doing 2 days a week, and they brought me in to form a boys choir. And you would think in Harlem they would be, you know, singing their butts off, but I could not find one boy that could sing. It was crazy.
They were horrible.
The best singer was, like, mediocre. So I was like, okay, I got my work cut out for me. But, you know, you range in a very skillful way, and you find the strengths here and there. And I kind of, you know, I brought the program up, you know. It became a thing. So I started, then they found out I played vibes. So they actually bought some vibes for the boys. And, you know, because it was such a different instrument, you know, they took to it. But getting back to your point more so, in that experience, I think it's about who the young musician is exposed to. You know, because we emphasized, you know, the pocket, the groove, time, you know. I mean, it's interesting to see somebody that can work their way all around the drums in a very quick, flashy way. You know, I love to watch that. I like to watch the battle videos, the shed videos, rather. You know, I mean, and that's great. That's great. But when we're talking about playing music in a group, in an ensemble, you know, the people want to get a feeling. They want something they can understand. They, you know, they want to tap their foot, bob their head. You know, they don't mind thinking a little bit, but they get a lot of the thought process from the lyrical content. So your purpose is to make that groove feel as good as you can make it feel. You want to make people dance. And, you know, I learned that from a very young age because, again, coming up during the time I came up and in that Midwest environment, if we didn't have anything else, we had that groove. We may have not known the harmonies, the hip harmonies, or we may have not known the intricate lines, linear thing, but it was all about the groove. So as I got older, when I got in different circles and people would talk about, you know, how, oh, man, you got a swing, you got a groove. I mean, I would just laugh because I was like, okay, you know, that's all.
People don't like that. They don't. I mean, it's cool for, like, to have a, like, if that's your thing, like, to have it sometimes. But when people pay money to see, like, if you're going to do, like, cover a song, they want to hear the original version. They don't want to hear what you wrote up last night. Like, people want to, like you said, have dance and have a good time. So if you're going to do that, you got to make it. I feel like it's simple enough to instruction, the way music is, to where you play it like it is, but then you find your own kind of groove to it. And
People don't mind being surprised a little bit, too. But you can't go too far with it, you know. Just enough to make them, you know, say, oh, that was cute, you know.
Right.
That was a little different. But don't mess their head up. You're not there to confuse people.
Yeah, because they're going to be confused, and then you're going to see them pull their phone out, and that's not good. It's like, and if they're in their phone the whole time while you're playing, I hate that. That's just my feeling. When I'm playing, when I'm doing a gig, I want everybody to have their phone, like, in their purse or in their pocket, and I want them, like, in tune to what I'm doing. If I see somebody playing their phone, I'm like, man, we gotta play something else. We gotta segue to something else. Cause I don't I don't like seeing that in the audience, people like in their phone like that. Yeah. I want everybody participating.
Yeah, you want that phone, you want that camera on you. knowing that
right,
you're
right, right, right.
live or YouTube or something.
Exactly.
Or you
right, exactly.
Just checking you out, and you know, and that's very important what you say. You gotta be aware of the feeling you're getting from your audience. You gotta look out there. You gotta see what they're responding to. You know, I mean, I've played with some, you know, musicians who are like in my age bracket who've been out there playing forever, but they still don't know about pacing. They don't know about how you gotta keep things flowing. They don't know about how you can't play a certain type of tune right next to another type of tune that's similar. You know, all these little things that are big things, really, you know, as part of professionalism. You gotta gauge the audience. Every audience doesn't like the same kind of thing. You can't force stuff on the audience. Like I say, you can give them little surprises. I call them give them little gifts, something maybe they didn't expect, a little more than they expect.
Right,
but,
right, right.
You know, with that kind of gifting mentality, not to prove something or not to say, oh, look how great I am or look how intricate I could be. People don't want intricate, you know, unless you can make it groove. And that's a real challenge, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Go ahead, Will. I know you had a question. Go ahead.
Yes. Wow. Mr. Monte Croft, thank you so much. I thoroughly enjoyed this interview. This is outstanding. And thank you, Q-Land, for allowing me to have at least one question on your show tonight. Okay.
Just only one question and make it very quickly.
Q-Land.
One question and make it very quickly.
Q-Land.
Thankful.
One question. Thank you, Mr. Croft. I do have one question. See, you have to understand, you know, I was fired. I was fired from the Soul Savage
oh,
show.
Oh, here you go with this soapbox.
We're
having a great conversation. Here you go, see? There you go.
Q-Land, I thought you gave me a little opportunity to speak to Mr. Croft. Is that okay with you? All right. Thank you very much.
My God.
Thoroughly enjoyed. Let me give Mr. Croft his props. Would you please do that? Be kind to the host. I mean, and to the guests, Q-Land.
Oh, my God.
Mr. Croft.
I'm enjoying myself, too. I've been having a great time. I've
enjoyed you tremendously.
He did all that just to say that. Ask him a question.
You know, I tell you, you sound more like 45 every day, you know, interrupting and, you know, fake news and...
No.
All right, so Mr. Croft. Okay,
I only have
a few minutes here, Mr. Croft. So may I please?
And you've taken up about three of them. So please go ahead and ask your questions, please. Before I get happy with this mute button.
You know, you can use your new button all you want, but where's your music coming from? So, Mr. Croft.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness. Please stop interrupting Q-Land. So I was fired from the Soul Savage show, okay,
as a regular host. I think that's the point of your question.
So I just want you to know.
I'm so sorry, Monty. I'm sorry that you have to be a victim of this and have to be in with this therapy session
I just want Mr. Croft to know why I only have one question. All right. So, I have a question.
It kept going.
Okay.
I could have did that.
Q-Land, I have a mute button here.
I digress.
Mr. Croft.
Okay.
I'm here.
Okay, sir. Okay.
But y'all quit fighting, please.
Right.
I know, right?
We do this every
week. I know, right?
I just want to know, what group, Mr. Croft, what group that inspired you, and what do you consider your launching point? Who was your all-time artist that you've played with or group? Second question, and who's your favorite, Michael Jackson or Prince?
Wow.
Here we go with this. Are you serious right now?
This is good. I mean,
no, it's not good, EB, because we're trying to have a great... Okay, go ahead.
Who is the third voice? Who's that other voice? Eric and Q Lynn, but who's the other voice?
Oh, my name is William. I have been relegated to just the engineer on Q-Land's show, but
he's our producer because, you know, he likes the Fine Taste and the Pinot Grigio. And so he keep referencing being fired because, we no longer needed his services on the Soul Savage Radio Show. It just needed, you know, somebody to, you know, engineer us and get us in and out of break. You know, he does a great job with that.
Okay.
You know, instead of confusing guests, I'm surprised he didn't confuse you with Miles Davis.
No.
That's just a whole nother story. But go ahead with your, even though he's not living, but he does that sometimes, you know.
Q-Lin is confusing.
He don't know who's on.
What's confusing is I am the owner of this radio station. So, Mr. Crowell.
Oh, my goodness. If you can answer his question, he's trying to get you into this debate. I'm not taking the bait on this one. You can answer his question. I'm going to ignore it.
Those were the hardest questions of the night, perhaps. Michael Jackson and Prince. Well, I would have to say, if I can answer it in this way, the Jackson family legacy is, I think, really without equal, you know, when you take into account the importance of the Jackson 5 for young black America at that time. You know, it was a year after Dr. King was assassinated. We needed something to uplift us, and I think Berry Gordy knew that. And, you know, it was just the way fate connected the two things, and he built up that group, and with the phenomenal talent of the brothers, and, of course, Michael in front. I think that's a very important part of history, not to knock Prince. I mean, Prince is incredible. I'm a big fan, you know. Had all his records up to a certain point. But if you're going to force the comparison, I got to kind of give it to Michael for the entire legacy of the Jacksons.
Did you hear that, Q-Lin?
Actually, his point ain't even referencing with Prince. He's talking about the whole legacy of a family. So that's technically not the same thing.
Well, it do not
not the comparison you want. So
how are you going to explain Mr. Croft's explanation? I think you should leave it alone. It's simple.
I can't believe you stopped the show to answer the. I thought you were going. We have me and EB made some dignified, some really thorough research questions. I think he asked. I guess we could. That was a great question, but. What else did you ask? You asked about what was his favorite artist back then?
The question was, who inspired him, and what launching point? In other words,
Like
what group was that that you said, "Wow, this is me, and this is I can do this, and I can implement this, and perhaps duplicate it."
Well, I'm a Stevie Wonder fanatic. Anybody that knows me knows that.
Oh,
I love
man.
Stevie, and. It wasn't like I said I could do that.
Right.
Because nobody could really do what Stevie does. But, I mean, he just inspires me to no end. I mean, he's like a conduit to me, to a higher power. I mean, he just hears what we cannot hear. I mean, he was a phenomenal musician. I mean, just incredible. So if I had to single out one person, I would single out Stevie Wonder. Sure. But, you know, I got a long list, you know, people I love. You mentioned Miles Davis and, you know, Sly Stone. And, man, it goes on and on. And there are people today that inspire me, you know.
Oh, man.
You learn something from everybody.
When I got, oh, man.
From everybody.
Okay.
And I really believe that.
Okay. I'm done with my question.
Q-Lin,
hold on, please.
Q-Lin?
Okay. Q-Lin? Hold on one second. Yes. Thank you so much for that. I'm going to go back to, you know, to my engineering duties. But anyway, we would like to have you on some other, we would love to have you on some other shows. We have smooth jazz, R&B, lots of R&B. And, I'll get the contact information from, Eric and also Q-Lin, and we'll talk soon. Okay. All right. Q-Lin, back to you.
Oh, I was just going to say, Sly Stone, when you mentioned Sly, I think that was that's a great question, except for that last one, he trying to, you know, that wasn't anywhere near directed at you, Monty. He was trying to get you on his side. It didn't work well, because that was a
yes,
great
it did. You heard Michael Jackson. You heard that, Q-Lin. You heard
whatever.
That.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, I'm cool and calm. I'm not. He's not gonna take me there at this show because we have great guests on.
War and
thank
you. They have a war, Monty.
It's in the Prince camp.
That's his war. I say Prince to me is fine trying a conversation, And so I don't have just regular, any kind of, conversation with peasants. So, we're not even going to, address the things he said on this show about Prince. But I digress. But
wow.
I don't have Prince conversations with peasants. His conversation, I call Prince conversations fine China conversations. And his conversations is more like paper plate conversations. So
really?
We gonna keep moving on. And I have one more question, and we gonna let you go because we gotta get you back on because I have way more questions than this. I have like maybe 10.
Prince is second string.
Wow.
You see what I'm saying? He says disrespectful stuff like that. I'm just gonna ignore it because he's trying to get me hyped up. We have a great conversation, so we gonna keep this great conversation going. This is my final question.
Okay.
This is, listen, I've seen your videos. I'm intrigued. I wish I was in New York so I could visit this venue.
Sugar Bar.
And yeah, I see your videos online. Fantastic. I feel like, are we going to get an EP or a full LP anytime soon from you?
The short answer is no time soon, but, that's on the schedule. I mean, the record business is so different today, I'm having a hard time.
Yeah, but it's like, the window is so open though to do your own thing. Like, you don't even have to like, I feel like there's so many great different jazz artists around the scene. I feel like that now they could like, it would fit so perfect with what you do because I feel like, Your ability is just so unique, and I love how you use the vibraphone, and I feel like that's like, I know you say that's not your main instrument, but that, the way you incorporate that in certain things, it's like, people would be like, into that. And yeah, I feel like if you were in that, man, and I feel like, I know, your style game, everything, that all plays a part. Artists, like, you have the package for all that, and I know, if people hit me up, message me now, they see your picture, they like, what is going on? Like, does he have an album out? Or they want to know. There's people messaging me now. I ain't gonna tell you. They're being inappropriate though. Cause I put your picture up there. I waited for the end of the show to say this. He's a happily married man. Oh yeah, shout out to your wife. Isn't she a cartoonist?
She is.
Right. Man, and Alan just texted me that.
Yes,
shout out to Alan for knowing, for being a fan of the Croft family.
Shout out to Alan. Shout out.
Being a fan of the Croft family. Barbara, he knows all that.
Barbara has a great legacy as a cartoonist that was actually started by her father. And she picked it up, and she was the only African-American woman to date that was in the mainstream press with a comic strip.
Wow. Well,
that is legacy right there. And like I was saying, your style game, you're dapper. I feel like you can draw a young audience and the older crowd that has appreciation for jazz music. I feel like if you drop it now, it would still do good because you have a great following, and I think people would really be into it. That's just my opinion.
I'll take that into account. And
I buy it because I'm about to buy your recent albums from there. I'm about to buy those. Soon as I get my musical plug together, we about to get these albums. I'm about to find it. I'm about to buy one of them now.
That is very encouraging, and I will take that into account. When I do it, I want to do it right, and I want to maximize it.
Yeah.
I got to figure it out. It's this strange territory today, Whenever somebody shows me their independent project, I always ask them, why did you do that? And I get a different answer from everybody, so I have to be sure in myself why I'm doing it. I don't want to just do something to sell at my gigs, I want it to. I gotta figure it out. I'm listening to everything you say though, and it makes me feel good, and it encourages me, and it makes me go in that direction. But you'll be the first to know.
Yeah, I'm looking. Listen, as soon as you give a hint, if you like create something and do a hint that you in the studio create something, I'm ready for it, and I'm gonna get a write up for it. It's gonna be on the website. I'm going to do an album review and everything. It's going to be on the website. I'm already putting that out there. But, yeah, I might do a little thing on there called Soul Savvy Classics. I might pull that up and put one of your records on there. Or EB could do that or could do some kind of – you do that on your website.
I do that on my site all the time, of course.
Okay. Man,
yeah.
This is such a great conversation. We gotta do you gotta promise me a 2-hour one. We gotta do a whole thing on music, whole spill.
Okay, I promise.
Man, we gotta schedule this all, and I'm being dead serious. We gonna schedule a date where we do a 2-hour show with Monty Croft, a jazz veteran or a veteran musician, getting knowledge. I'm taking it in. This is an incredible show. Thank you so much for coming on.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. I had a great time. You guys are great.
Thank you, Monty. Thank you.
And we should be looking for, you said, the Sugar Bar, Ashley says Valerie's Sugar Bar, you said?
Sugar Bar.
Asher and Simpson Sugar Bar, yeah. Nick has passed on, but Valerie's still holding it down.
Right.
Great venue, great food, great atmosphere. It's a music room. You know, they have stage lights.
Good wing. Real good wing.
You been there, EB? You said you've been there before, right?
I've been here. I've worked 4 blocks away, so I'll be there next Wednesday.
Oh, right on.
Gotta tell me about that, EB.
Yeah.
What's the time, East Coast time? Because I know we got a lot of listeners on the East Coast. What's the time?
We play from 8 to 11 on Wednesday night.
Oh, there we go. That's what I'm talking about. Right. There we go. Man, I'm so jealous EB's over there where he can hear to get a preview of all this, because I want to go. I got to schedule a trip and just go there and just see the live
Come
feed
on.
Or whatever. But thank Come you. On. Thank you so much for coming on, Monty.
Q-Land, don't forget to share the app. Don't forget to share the app.
Oh, yes. To the listeners, IMG2 app. Make sure y'all tune into the show. We're doing this live, so if y'all didn't catch this interview live, y'all missed out on a treat. But to those that listen to the full audio, we gonna hook y'all up on the website. I'm gonna publish this. We gonna get the audio out there. But thank you so much, Monty, for coming on. I appreciate this. This is amazing. I learned so much. The wealth of knowledge. I feel like I did with Karen White because my head is just going in circles right now. Getting ADD. I'm excited. Man, we gotta have you back on. This is crazy.
I'll be there.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'll talk to you again.
All right. Will, if you want to, if you're ready, hit us with that back-to-back, and we give an appreciation to our evangelist. Brother Love. Poppy Combs.
Let's do this.
Woo! Let's give it up, y'all. There we go. You make my life complete.
pride and joy. You're my baby boy. People ask me how I feel about you. They ask me if I love you. Yeah. Am I crazy for you? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kissing you so good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hey, it's Faith Evans, All This Love. And we kicked off this break with Total, Kissing You. And welcome back to the Soul Savvy Show with your hosts, EB and Q Lynn.
Hey, y'all. We're back. We just interviewed somebody just amazing. Shout out to Monty Croft again for coming on Soul Savvy Radio Show. Like I said, when we were on, we're doing a part two of that interview because it was just too good. I know we didn't schedule it on. I didn't know how much time we had of them. That's why I didn't schedule them on for like a whole 2 hours because we could have did that. But we definitely doing a part two. So shout out to Monty out here doing the Lord's work with his musicianship, teaching us youngins that trying to learn something. But yeah, we get in. Man, we got so much to talk about. We only got like 30 minutes. Hopefully we get a little bit of time because I had so much to talk about and that interview just went really well and it just, man, that was a crazy interview, but yeah. Everything was divided. I have so many emails backed up from the Pino Grigio show, from last week's show. EB, you missed out on a treat last week. I know you had your Uber job at it. Uber job to do last
See,
week.
See, I told you, EB.
Another shift we had to pick up, so you didn't get to experience what we experienced last week. But, yeah, shout out to Angela. I'm on Facebook Live right now. I got it together. I'm doing it separate from my phone so they can hear me. What's up? I'm giving all shout outs to the people that just joined in. I just shouted out my Wanda, Monty Krob. He just joined. Angela. Shout out to Angela. And she was on my side last week, Will, when she was commenting on the Facebook Live. She said she's on my side.
About so, what?
I said when I told them to comment who won the argument, I said type in Q-Lynn or Will, and guess who they picked? Yours truly. Cause
she's probably your, that doesn't count. That's a fake.
It does count.
It doesn't count. She's
you know what I just said?
Yeah, she's biased.
Let's just run down this list of all these ex-friends I have. I ain't call them my friends. They about to be all ex-friends because how dare y'all side with Will and say that I need to split my check with Will, that I need to pay up with that lawsuit. Are y'all kidding me right now? Y'all supposed to, how y'all just going to be on Will's side?
Because you're wrong.
Two of them don't count because I was talking about it on the show. How y'all just going to just betray me like this? This isn't.
No.
This isn't what this is supposed to be about.
Hey.
This is ridiculous.
Hey, who are they?
I'm not about to put their name. Alan, okay. You already know Alan. I already mentioned him a couple times already on the show.
Will loves you. Will, keep it
Alan
up.
Alan don't.
Because,
Alan doesn't
you know,
count.
Will is right.
He said that because he's good
I've been
about
slandered.
Me, making these jokes. And then Haley, I listened back to that audio show, the shout out
really?
To Evan told by Herb Brown. She was on here, she was on here saying, that I was, Republican out here, that she agreed with.
Yep.
I didn't even hear when she said that in the
yep.
show.
I tell you what.
Hey.
Go by the very definition.
Oh.
You're demanding, you know, you don't accept it, you don't make any apologies, you know, you discriminate, yep, you are clauses 45.
Well, you backtracked. You the one more like 45 than I am. What are you talking about? This isn't, nothing you said, you didn't back up nothing you said. I had all the facts and the evidence. The facts and evidence is in the audio. All the ones that's agreeing with you, they ain't got good sex because it's all, if they want to do the research, it's in there.
No, it's all in the lawsuit. It's all in the lawsuit. You fired me for no apparent reason. It's all in the lawsuit.
Yeah. For no reason, so I don't know what you're talking about. Y'all see what I got to do? Matter of fact, we on live, Facebook Live again. I'm going to let y'all interact with us again. If y'all even got to be hip to what we talking about. Comment on the Facebook Live and say once again, if you agree with Q Lynn, type in there, Q Lynn or Will.
No.
And I'm going to read the answers while we doing the Raggedy People and Savvy News.
Okay.
I'll comment right here. If this is a replay, like I said before, if this is a replay for y'all make sure y'all, in this portion of the show, y'all say whose side y'all on. And I just want to let y'all know, to just give further evidence, we have a producer on the show that drinks and it's not me. Our producer, Engineer Drink,
oh,
on the show.
Keep talking.
This is evident.
It's all being recorded.
I just want to say.
So, now we already got one coming in. Angela just commented and said she's put, what, Q Lynn? Because guess what? I ain't telling no lies on this show. She just said it again.
I just
want to
say.
She on Facebook Live right now.
Q. I just want
to type in who you agree with.
Q,
go ahead, EB.
Okay, EB.
Go ahead.
I hate it when mommy and daddy fight, y'all. I hate it.
Oh, please. Oh, please.
We love it. It's great stuff. Oh, and it's been verified. Hey, what, Q-Lynn, what does the audience have to say about, MJ or Prince? And they know I'm right.
We're not supposed to do this on this show. No, don't y'all comment on there. If y'all heard what you just said, don't y'all comment.
Oh, you know what? I agree.
Don't y'all comment.
Prince
we ain't doing no MJ versus Prince discussion.
Okay, well, let's go.
All y'all say MJ, I'm blocking all y'all.
Okay.
I don't care if you're family or not.
Let's go with Rick James versus Prince.
Business Rick, associates, I don't
Rick
care.
James.
Don't y'all comment on this and say Prince or MJ.
See, EB. EB, you see what's going on.
Part seven of this. Y'all about to see
you understand, EB. Okay, she doesn't want us to get a word in. That's how she works, okay?
I'm telling you.
No, it's, okay. Okay, Rick James or Prince? Rick James, baby,
no,
all day
don't
long.
Don't comment. If y'all hear what he said with this, don't y'all listen to the producer of the show. Don't comment Prince or MJ. I'm being dead serious.
Do that too.
Because, no,
because you know
we're not doing this.
Hey, MJ is starting five. Prince is on the bench, baby.
What? Man, we're not even gonna do that. We got so much stuff to talk about, and you gonna hit us with that Emmy music. And if you do that, I just saw what you put on there, EB. You put Rick James. Yeah, I could get with that. We gotta do an actual show talk about Rick James versus Prince.
No.
I'm trying to figure out how this conversation started from that, because that's not how this conversation started. We'll try to turn this into a whole different show. Man.
I love it. Oh my God, this is good. All right.
Man, okay, we're gonna move on to the show.
Rick James, baby. All day. Versus
Prince.
Yeah,
that's the real argument there. We not, and then we gonna exclude, Will from the conversation as well since he won. Matter of fact, any kind of discussion, we actually gonna have a Prince head coming on, and you ain't gonna do this on the show. I was showing up blocking cause we gonna give reverence for the whole 2 hours of Prince. We gonna have a whole show dedicated to him. And if you come on here with that foolishness, I'm cutting you off.
Don't
do that off air.
Don't do it.
That Prince conversation is going to be sacred, and you are not invited to the conversation. Because you know what? You ain't going to get on this show and say, he rides the bitch compared to... Nah, you're not coming on this show when you just said that about Prince. You're not doing it no kind of... You're going to have a heavy conversation,
yep,
and you're not invited. And that goes for anybody that comes on this show. You ain't welcomed at the table with fine china. All y'all getting paper plates.
Well, you already fired me anyway, so shucks. I don't care.
Listen, last week when EB went on his Uber shift, we had a great Raggedy People and Sappy News. You were inclusive into the show. I didn't crack any Pinot Grigio jokes. You kept breaking them up, and I kept trying to get you involved with the show. You kept ignoring it. So what I would need you to do is just respect the fact that you were in this show. It's a great show. Julie enjoyed it. You did try to cut us off when we was talking. Oh yeah, EB, we were talking about last week we were talking about the Shea Moisture commercial, and we were talking about, well, Julie was talking about crushes, and he got uncomfortable and was trying to block our conversation because he was jealous, because we were talking about those fine men with beards, and it just got... He was like, all right, wrap this up because I want to hear this. I'm still editing that show, by the way. But anyway, you're not going to come on this show hating on Prince and think you're going to be, you absolutely are exercising the Prince conversation. I'll tell you right now, if you come on there with that, I'm going to go buck wild crazy on you. What I said before, it's going to be lightweight if you come on this show being disrespectful. I'm being dead serious. I'm going to completely lose my mind if you come on that show talking dirty about Prince. We ain't gonna allow none of that. And I will mute you, and then I'll call off, I'll log off, and do it by myself, and we'll have a whole conversation talking about prayer. So don't you do it. Anyway, here we go again. We just spent about 10 minutes talking about this foolishness with Will, and he loves it when we do this. Because he likes to divert some attention so he can, get into a conversation and get some revved up. He wants to drink Pinot Grigio while we doing Raggedy People and Savvy News.
See, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Look, Miss 45 and a Miss 45 and a half.
Ain't no 45. These are facts. He don't give no facts. I'm giving all the facts. Cause guess what? All these people on Facebook Live and the people that's watching on Facebook Live, all y'all can log on.
This
and,
is divisive.
And hear what he's talking about.
Yeah.
That ain't no divisive.
That's all you guys do. Yeah.
Ain't no lies being told.
Okay, you in the closet. You're a closet Republican.
I just want to know, can we get an extra, let me see.
You need
15 minutes till.
You need my help now,
can we
huh?
go to 15 minutes after? I mean, that's what I meant to say. 15 minutes after.
Oh, you need my help. I understand. So now I'm important to you.
That was a yes or no question. It didn't cause for all this, echiness. It was a yes or no question. So we can move on to Raggedy People and Savvy News.
Okay.
Because the people, I just told the people on Facebook Live we're doing Raggedy People and Savvy News. We gotta do it really quickly.
Okay.
We're almost out of time.
Yes. No, ma'am. Let's see exactly, since you're allowing me. Okay.
What?
Yes. Okay. I think we can make that request happen for you. How about that?
Okay, thank you.
Oh, you being kind. Okay, Miss Green. Evie?
Yes, I'm being kind. For a change.
Will sounds confused, like he's not used to you being kind.
No.
It's mostly because I'm on Facebook
and
Live.
And nobody else is either.
I'm trying to act right.
Right.
It's mostly because I'm on Facebook Live right now, and I'm trying to act right in front of the company, because we got people tuning in.
See, EB, it's all fake. It's all fake.
Hilarious.
Whatever. Okay, we're going to pull up. We're going to do Raggedy People News first. If y'all are new to this, Raggedy People News. I'm addressing the people on Facebook Live. Raggedy People News is pretty self-explanatory. It's mostly people, news topics that I feel, the people that's in it deserve to be named Raggedy People. It's pretty self-explanatory when we get into it. That's just to address the people. And if you're listening on live on the IMG2 app, you can simultaneously, do both at the same time. It's a great thing. If you want to hear all those great classic songs that we were just dropping on y'all, we gave y'all Diddy hits. Or, you know, it's affiliate, it's Diddy Hits, because it's affiliate, Bad Boy era. We give an appreciation to Evangelist, Brother Love, Puffy Combs. We give a reference to him throughout the show, playing all the Bad Boy hits, because he had a birthday last Saturday. And it's a joke. I know he said on there it was that he was joking after the fact, but yeah, whatever he want to be called, he deserves, because guess what? He's our evangelist. Yes, I'm saying that. Don't get mad and call me saying I'm idolatry or whatever. I'm just stating facts. This man is a mogul, everything. So I'm trying to pull up Raggedy People News. We have so much. Who did you want to talk about first, EB?
You know what? I want to talk about the person who stole $500 from me this week.
Ooh. Man, we should be that right.
Yeah, the person who used my debit card number last night. I'm not sure how you did it. I'm not tech savvy enough. I know it was you, Kendu Isaacs. You couldn't get the money from Mary J. Blige, so you decided to come and take my money, which I don't understand that I work hard for. So you're raggedy, like. How are you going to take, I'm so glad I was actually using my card. I was buying some jerk chicken when I noticed that the text messages came through telling me that these charges were being made of. This money was coming out of my account. Kendu, you raggedy, man. You so raggedy. Just leave Mary alone and leave me alone. Like, we done with you. Like, why are you coming after our money?
Right. Get out of people's pockets, stealing. You got a result to stealing first? You got a result to stealing?
Listen,
that ain't what it's
about. My night
first of all. My night was terrible after that. I was just, yeah, you ever try to eat mad? Like, I'm trying to eat my jerk chicken, but I'm mad and I'm pouting and you know, it didn't work out as well.
I was paranoid when it, I was just paranoid because everybody that walked by, I was like, you probably want to stole from me, didn't you? I was smacking shit on you, right? I'm sorry about that. I reverted back to my old ways of thinking. I was ready to, listen, when somebody still, it's not a great feeling at all when somebody still streams.
It's not.
It's a range of emotions I feel. I've never felt a range of emotions. For one, because I was getting ready to move when it happened. So with the pressure for that, and then me having a long night, packing and all that stuff, and then I had to deal with somebody breaking in, and what's so weird about it, I was usually up at that time. So, for that to happen, oh man, and then, I already told the story, I think, on a podcast. I told y'all this, tell a bunch of information on there, but I ain't gonna put it on here because y'all nosy. But, anyway, that's not a good feeling at all, and I'm sorry that happened to you because I know what you feeling. I know directly what you're feeling, and it ain't nothing Christian like what I'm feeling, what I was feeling.
Oh, not at all.
Man, I should have waited and not put this on Facebook Live so I could really express. We're going to do it the next show because I'm trying to act good in front of company, and we might have some, like sponsorship or advertisements, people want to do something with us listening in, so I'm trying to contain myself. But I'm going to save it for the next show. But we getting all off topic. Like, well, yeah, shout out to that raggedy person that, like, stealing from people that don't want to work for what they got. Like, shout out to all the thieves out there. I already told EV privately, we need to, and I'll say it publicly because I don't care. The people that steal, in my opinion, I feel like we need to bring back Roman law and where we start chopping off hands for stealing and stuff. People that steal, like, round them up and start chopping off hands. People that lie for no reason, we start cutting tongues out. I know that's a little bit graphic and dark, but that's how I feel. I'm just saying. Sorry, people on Facebook that don't agree with it. I just feel like we need to bring back Roman law, because if you've never had something taken from you, it is the worst feeling in the world. And I can see why people retaliate in the streets, because that's real. That's real. Ain't no praying away my money. Yes, we get it back when you handle it, whatever, the bank will give it back. But in that moment, it don't matter. I'm ready to chop off hands. Like, that's where I'm at. Judicial system, if we could get that back into play, make that happen where we just start cutting off hands. You know, bring back Roman law. That's my opinion. But yeah, who else we got? Yeah, shout out to that raggedy person that don't want to work for a living and steal from people. Shout out to
that
raggedy.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, major shout out. I hope you go have a pine saw martini and you can go let a bus parallel park around your head. You can also go fall down a flight of stairs. You can also do that as well. You can have a bleach martini on us. And we can move on. Raggedy People News, also LiAngelo, UCLA players in China, they were at a Louis Vuitton store and were caught for stealing. And these are very major charges they got. If y'all not familiar with China and their rules, I don't suggest, people to be, just acting buck wild and how y'all just gonna go to a whole continent and just act like this? And, you know, I know this is they're young kids, but, you know, somebody should have briefed them of the rules in China. You can't just be doing that in, you know, somebody else's country, cause they don't play them games in China. Y'all already know the stories of how they get down in Asia. This ain't, it ain't democracy everywhere. If you're not informed of that in the United States, I don't care what age you are, I would want y'all to read up on China, because they don't play no games. My only opinion is that his daddy's taking it, LeVar Ball is taking it lightly, he better take that very seriously, them charges, because they do not, the Asians, the cult, they do not play around. China does not play around, y'all. And this raggedy president y'all got ain't gonna help y'all out. So, I'm just saying, this raggedy president y'all have in office ain't gonna get y'all out of China. So, they facing up to 3 to 10 years, that's what it says for robbery. Y'all might think that's extreme, but hey, that ain't United States of America.
Listen, LeVar Ball don't even take his teeth seriously, so how do you expect for him to take this matter seriously?
Y'all hear my co-host, DB? You see how he...
I'm just saying. I'm just being honest. Come on now.
It's him every week, y'all. He talks like this. I'm just letting the people know on Facebook Live what's going on.
This is not what happens.
Hey, Freddie.
That was a good one.
I see Will joining on. What's going on? Yes,
I'm here.
Yeah,
I'm listening.
No, I was just saying I saw you joined on Facebook Live. I was just shouting out to people on the live chat. I was trying to pull up some more stories. It says Kevin Spacey. I know you were talking about that. We forgot to talk about that last week when you left. You can go ahead on that if you want to, DB.
Oh man, it's crazy because I mean, as of today, I think so many more people have either been outed or come forward as predators or people who have committed either some type of sexual assault, sexual abuse, and preyed on other people, not even just in Hollywood, but even in our everyday real life. I just think it's unfortunate that so many people that we've in some ways put on a pedestal of people that we have admired are being outed as rapists and sexual predators. And it's crazy. I saw someone say today that we're making all these announcements about everyone in Hollywood, you know, that they're predators, they're sexual abusers, so they're no longer fit to entertain us, and yet we, at this very moment in the White House, have a man who is accused of doing the same things, and he's fit to run our country. And I think that's just wild. It doesn't make any sense to me.
It doesn't. And yeah, Kevin, yeah, I think from now on, I need to quit proclaiming stuff as my favorite movie or my favorite
right.
comedian, because like, every time I do that, like, somebody comes out, like Louis C.K. I mentioned one show about my top
yep.
favorite comedians, and now I gotta throw them out, like, we gotta throw all our favorite people in the trash. I throw Ray Lewis in the trash. All our favorite people in the trash. Now, we didn't read the update. I'm just gonna, we got so much emails talking about Tyrese last week and freaking Tina Campbell. Listen, Evie, I'm not gonna get you, I know you're gonna get hyped up. I'm trying to see if I want to pull them up, because they was all terrible. But I'll just
pull
say, Tyrese is in the news. I know y'all ain't saying nothing now, so all the people that wrote them emails that one week when we were talking about it, y'all sure ain't saying nothing now. This fool skipped out on a trip with his daughter to go overseas or wherever he went. He sure didn't take up the opportunity to see his daughter. Y'all proclaimed him to be a great father, and he passed up on seeing his daughter to go overseas to flaunt with some money that ain't his. Wherever he got money, a free trip to wherever he went to, because he's famous. But I just want to say that, listen, I almost got hyped up. Y'all so lucky we on Facebook Live. I know how to control myself, because I was getting ready to cuss all y'all out that sent me those emails. Yes, I read all the emails that sent us. It's a lot of time positive. The positive emails outweigh, or comments, wherever they come from, outweigh the negative. But people that call themselves trying to get us together about information, the difference between us, we don't sit up here and advocate for people we don't know. And so if I've seen these people in person, if I've had some kind of inclination of their character besides their art or whatever they do, I will say it, just like what I said before with Tyrese or whatever. He seems like an a-hole in person. I've seen him multiple times. That's my inclination of what I was going off his energy. I don't know. I don't have a problem admitting that most of the people, like Ray Lewis and, like we mentioned before, Kevin Spacey, he's in my favorite movie, The Negotiator. Now I can't even watch that anymore because now it's weird, you know, thinking about that. I said that was my top favorite movie. He's trash. Louis C.K., I said he was one of my top favorite comedians. Now he's trash. And I got to I should have put Bill Burr in there before him anyway, because I like Bill Burr more than him, because he's just a lot more. I just like the way he set up his joke. He sets up jokes way better than Louis C.K. if I had to switch somebody out. But anyway, for y'all to sit up here and just make all these y'all get, like I said before, and I say on the show all the time, y'all get mad at the wrong thing. It's like the stuff you're supposed to be mad at, like all these allegations against these stars and actual trying to create conversations of sexual assault and child molestation. Y'all get uncomfortable and y'all advocate for that and sexual assault against women, but y'all advocate for people that have been accused of this and don't even know these people. And then it's people that's actually like been fined or been had a history of doing this behavior. Y'all, it's a whole nother conversation. Just like with the Bill Cosby. And shout out to all the Bill Cosby apologists that ain't saying nothing now. That all these different powerful white men are getting stuff taken from them. Why are y'all not making comparisons now? Y'all trying to turn this into a whole, oh, it's the black man stuff. No, it's not. It's just people that has got away with stuff. People in powerful positions that get away with stuff, and now they're getting caught now. That's what that is, because social media is a powerful source in the way we navigate through life now, whether you like it or not. Technology is a part of how we interact with each other, different reasons for business, networking, and so it's a powerful source. So if you say anything ridiculous out here, yeah, you can get a lot of stuff taken from you. And for all you people advocating for Tina, I'll just make the point to the people that sent the emails for Tina and Chrisette Michelle. The problem with Chrisette Michelle and Tina Campbell, their issue was that they did a lot of backpedaling and lying. And you know, black people specifically on Twitter, they're going to call you out, and they're going to run them receipts. That's what it was. Chrisette Michelle said this. She's come out saying that, oh, she's doing it to try to bring people together. Then she keeps going on different shows talking about, did you not see my Basquiat skirt? Did you not see me making this? No, girl, we didn't see your Basquiat skirt because we ain't checking for no CNN at 7 o'clock in the morning to see your Basquiat skirt. Who watches the news at 7 o'clock in the morning? Everything you did was online. Everybody got wind of it, and you kept backpedaling. You kept backpedaling. And then now finally you see the errors of what you did, and now you're trying to... I already proved my point when I said that Tina and Chrisette Michelle need to get on a tour together and try to rummage up some coins to get these Double Copper albums sold. I said that before. Get these Double Copper albums into some titanium status, so y'all can surface some tour tickets. That's what I said. Didn't I say that like a day before she did that release? I said that day before because I already know what the game is with this PR stunts and all these media. That's all it is a game. And y'all fall into it every time. And y'all like, oh, how y'all gonna treat black people like this, all this? It ain't none of that. If these artists or whoever would just been honest about their intentions, just like with Tyrese. Tyrese has been a running joke on the internet for like almost 10 years now. Like, and some of y'all are new to it. Like, before he's sitting here, this alleged story of him, getting $5 million from Will and Jada, even if that was true, they told you not to get on the internet. And you get on IG and post, this misspelled name of her career title, Actress. I don't know what that is. I don't know if she's training to be the people that shoot, what is it called, the bow and arrow? What's that profession?
Some of the archers.
I don't know. Archers, I think that's what he meant to say. But he spelled it, like, you go on the internet, I know he's friends with Will and Jada, I know that, but for you to take private conversations like that and to publicly put that on there for people to see and be like, oh, look at this, it's all an illusion. And y'all believe anything somebody put out there. All he's putting out there was illusion. His life is an illusion. He tried to create a life that wasn't his, him being on yachts and all that stuff. And now that his wife, or ex-wife, saw that, I don't know what their intimate family dynamic is, so I don't know what happened in that marriage. Nobody does. So to comment on that would be ridiculous. Comment on his fathering abilities is ridiculous because y'all don't personally know these people. And for y'all to just be advocating for this idiot like y'all personally know this guy and try to create these stories like oh, y'all trying to ruin... Nobody's trying to... He ruined himself. Everybody saw what he did on the internet. How you go from trying to high sign that you got this and then being mad that your Fast and Furious 49 has to be set back until 2020 or wherever that movie comes out, because the star of the movie, my ex-husband, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, is getting his other coin somewhere else and got a spinoff of his own movie. He might get multiple movies after doing that. It might create his own, he create his own franchise from that. Tyrese is mad about that. And like what Amanda Seale said, in one of her IG stories, she's 100% right. He's a complete narcissist. He made this whole situation about himself. Nowhere did he put in that with these Shayla Rock hoodies that he has on talking about, I want to see my baby, but yet, creating all this, and going to her school and making it uncomfortable for her. The child said it out of her mouth that she was uncomfortable that he did that, flying the thing over there, but y'all still like, nah, he's a good father. How is it, the child is old enough to know what's going on, and I don't care about whatever it is, if he is or is not. The child said it out of her mouth. I'm not saying he isn't a good father, but for y'all to just take this and run is just ridiculous to me. And for all y'all out there, if y'all got an issue with what I said, y'all can absolutely comment right here, and I will respond back. To if y'all watching this on the replay, y'all can comment as well, and I'll interact with y'all and answer the question of this whole Tyrese debacle. We'll move on because we're running out of time. We only got like 15 minutes left. Let me see. This Roy, did you read about that Roy Moore story with that politician? That nasty politician.
I didn't get the full story, but I knew that he was leading in the polls at one point.
I have a comment on that. I have a little more information on it. Okay, he is a Republican senator from Alabama. Okay. And, Roy Moore. And so all of these allegations have been coming out, and many of them, right? And so the troubling part about it is the Republicans are trying to distance themselves away from him, right? And some are even defending it, saying, well, you know, that happened a long time ago. We need to hear both sides. But it was documented years ago that these allegations happened, okay? It never went to court, anything like that. Something interesting I heard on the news today. A grandmother back in Alabama, the reporters from CNN interviewed her and asked him about these allegations. Says, well, do you still support Roy Moore behind all this? She said, oh, yeah, absolutely. He said, well, he is accused of molesting a girl of 14 years old, and the statute is 16 in the state of Alabama. She said, oh, well, you know, that happened a long time ago, and this is the most astonishing thing about this. She said, if he, if God forgave him, then, you know, I think we should move on from this. So the problem is you have so many people that are brainwashed into that mentality. You know, and the forgiveness, you know, so that is the raggedy thing of the, it's incredible. But the thing about is that most people are forgiving this. I can't understand how so many people can't support these things. And you can even go back up into the White House, all right, with the Hollywood incident. And what's going to happen, I'm telling you, I promise you this. So much exposure right now because people are bold enough to come out and say something. Not only Hollywood, right. Find out how this is going to affect the rest of the country, and it's going to start. Look at the politicians. A lot of these cats are nervous right now, yeah. But some things are getting ready to happen. I'm telling you, folks, the shoe is getting ready to drop.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And shout out. We're going to get to that in Savvy News as well, talking about these elections that went on Tuesday in selective cities. Oklahoma wasn't a state that voted that week, so I'm registered to vote in Oklahoma, so I didn't vote Tuesday. If I could have, I would, but that wasn't our election time, so I didn't. No local election was going on in Oklahoma on Tuesday, and I would, also add on to that, Roy Moore, shout out, the other politician that's caping for this, nasty ass man, shout out to y'all for being raggedy as well. For sitting up here trying to bring up Bible scriptures to say, oh, Mary and Joseph, you know, trying to advocate for that.
Oh.
Woo! They need to find a pause button on here because I don't want to offend all the people on Facebook, but I want to say something so bad, and I might say it anyway. because that had me heated reading that. But oh, shout out to y'all.
Q-Lynn, I hate to interrupt, but guess what? If you need to read more, because that is Roy Moore's defense right now. Okay? And we're saying that.
Yeah, all the ones trying to defend, raggedy, like, dude has a fetish for children. How are you gonna advocate for that and try to bring the Bible into that? That's why nobody likes y'all, cause y'all be saying ridiculous stuff like that, and that's why everybody calls y'all and labels y'all the stuff that y'all don't like being labeled, like racist, like pedophiles, like perverts, because all y'all rock together and all y'all stand together for evil tree and wickedness, and that's why that party, I can't stand none of them. I can't even, sometimes I lean towards conservative sometimes because I try to have a different viewpoint on stuff, but I just hate how the Republicans are and how they have this gang mentality, and that's what it is of trying to stick together no matter what, specifically with this president we have in office. Because if this was Obama, we ain't even going to get on a tangent about that. We got to save it for another show because we run out of time. But yeah, if this is Obama, this would be like World War III going on right now. If he did any of the stuff that's going on that this orange-aid school Tampico president of y'all has been doing, he would have even made it to the election polls if he would have did half of this stuff that this. Woo! I want to cuss so bad, but I'm on Facebook trying to contain myself. Trying to get it together, y'all. Did y'all know how I am? I'm trying to contain the filthiness, but it gets out of control sometimes. But we're going to move on to savvy news. Like I said, talking about Tuesday night's elections, there's a lot of great things that happened on Tuesday night. What did you think of that, of all the wins that Democrats, I think a lot of wins for Democrats that were, that need to get fulfilled.
I think it was amazing. I think a lot of people after the presidential election and the aftermath of that and seeing the way things were being handled, I think a lot of people who didn't vote then or who don't normally vote in any elections outside of the presidential election were encouraged to go to the polls and vote and show support for those who show support for us. And I was so happy that so many people won. They had a lot of firsts, a lot of people of color, a lot of black people won. We had some transgender people winning elections. So I think it was a beautiful thing to see people actually showing up and showing out in support of ourselves, because that's really what the election is. It's for people to represent us and people who have our best interests at heart and people that we think will do the best job. And I don't think we fully grasped that back in November of last year when it was time to elect the president of the United States. So if any good has come out of Donald Trump's election, that's one of the positives. So thank you for that, Donald.
I'm gonna call you dumbass Donald. That's what my name is. We can move on. Ugh, I want to say so much more. Ooh, he makes sense. I can't stand him. Ugh, I want to cuss so bad. I want to use all the filthy words I can't use on here. But anyway,
you're doing good.
Okay. I know, right? Trying to keep it clean for the try not to mess up the church's money. You know what I mean? With this show, you know. Something might pop off. I don't want to say, hey, that girl's a little bit too vile on this show. We don't want to partner with her. She's a little bit too antsy. But anyway, going into savvy news, there's so many shows that went on. I was mostly getting caught up on a lot of shows. I saw the Moesha reunion. It was mostly people's reactions online that I was listening to. Y'all are like so stupid. And it was like one article I read on the Moesha show that somebody had written about, and they were like, Moesha reunion, they want a reboot of the Moesha show, and somebody retweeted and said, no to the, I thought that was hilarious. Y'all are dumb. They said no to the Moesha reboot.
Like the song.
Reboot. That's hilarious. I just love how they just come up with like clever stuff like that. Like, I would never came up with something like that. I thought it on the reel. I saw some of it online, but
so,
yeah.
My question is, why and how does Cheryl Lee Ralph still look so amazing?
I know, right? That young energy. You know why? Because her and her husband don't live in the same house, and they have two separate households and functioning very well after 20-plus years. That might be what it is.
That's
into some stuff that that sounds quite nice to me. Being married and living in, you know, not separate house. I shouldn't say it like that, but like they don't like each other. But two separate states. I think she lives in, I could be wrong, L.A. and I think he lives in New York. It could be vice versa, but they live in like two separate places. And they've been functioning like what? I saw that on, I forgot what document. I think it was like Unsung Hollywood or something. They had said that. I was like, you know what? That sounds pretty lit to me, you know, having a long distance husband.
That's a beautiful woman.
That's a beautiful thing.
Wow.
Right. Right, she's a legend. And it shows that the domino effect of when you do stuff like this. Louis C.K. was actually part of the Mississippi that he's an executive producer. I'm not sure of his title in there, but he's a part of that show that she's on now. But he's been X'd out of that. So, yeah.
Right.
Hey, Adrian, what's going on? Her show come on right after this. I'm sorry we don't behave ourselves on this show like y'all do on the other shows. She does such a great thing in the community and have like such great things going on. We sit here talk about Tina Campbell's Double Copper album. That's what we talk about on this show, and she talks about respectable stuff. Shout out to Adrian. I see you on Facebook Live. Do y'all hear me good on there? Y'all talk back to me. Y'all just sitting here just watching, or some of y'all been, y'all talk back to me and see if y'all can hear me correctly. I know this is a little janky, whatever. I'm gonna get it together. I'm not as technical savvy. I have a whole camera here, but I got up here late, so I'm doing it strictly for my laptop because I have a camera on there, and I have my other camera. I'm trying to show the people what's going on. I have this one. This is my other camera, but I didn't have time to set it up because, it's a lot doing this show, and when you don't have, you know, workers, you know, that don't want to get paid, you know, leave me all by my lonesome. You got to do it by yourself.
Hold it. Time out. You have a brilliant producer here in Southern California.
I'm not talking to, listen, can you do it like a, what's it called, a holographic version of yourself to come over here and operate this equipment, because that's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the show. I'm talking about physically somebody helping me with this show. That's what I'm talking about. I said, hey, Travis, thank you for tuning in. I was trying to tell the people what I got to do. If this is on my phone, I could show y'all all the setup and all I got going on. I know it looks like a blank wall right here. It's like pictures over here, but the light, that's the only way I could get good light through here, so.
They don't care. They don't care.
Right, I'm sorry. I'm having ADD. I'm trying to explain to people what's going on. I'm in this room. It's really nice lit room. Oh. And I had to turn the lights on real bright, or y'all would, it'd be looking like I was doing this from a flip phone if I didn't do that.
Okay. You have 3 minutes.
Hey, Amanda. Yeah, sorry about that. We got a few minutes. I'm trying to run past through here. Okay. Finish up Savvy News. We're doing Savvy News now, if y'all tuned in a little bit late. Thank you, Travis, for all the thumbs up. I appreciate that.
Is that Travis Amanda. Tester?
Travis Tester is on the show. We gotta get you back on there. I gotta get on your show. Travis, Inside 405. I gotta get on there. I'm gonna get on that show. All you gotta do is hit me up, Travis. I'm just saying. Hit me up, and I'm there. That's all you gotta do is say, we'll talk. I'm getting ADD. Okay, Savvy News, we talking about the CMA Awards. Did you watch, are you into country music like that where you watch the award show?
Not anymore.
Oh man, they were making a big deal about Garth Brooks lip singing. I watched it live. I didn't realize he was lip singing until I think mid part into the chorus.
Who made a big deal about that?
Country people, the country fans were making a big deal about it.
Really?
Yeah, they were. I know, right? It's going over to the other land. And you hear all kind of stories. I think some of them had an issue with Pink before. I'm like, it was beautiful. She performed on CMA Awards. It was really good. I really tuned in for that.
Beyonce, like lip-sync all the time.
Oh, here you go, y'all. Y'all hear my co-host Evie? Y'all hear my co-host Evie talking about Beyonce? Oh, man.
Once you prove yourself that you have the talent.
It is the other land, Travis and Kendall. It is, man. The other land, because they got all different kind of issues. You know, my favorite part was when Viacom owns like BET, CMT, and MTV and all those channels. So you remember when that Prince tribute was happening and they aired it on all the Viacom channels? That was a beautiful moment. Their reaction, the country fans' reaction to that is hilarious. They was really appalled by Prince being shown on TNT. They were like, turn that jigaboo, y'all turn that jigaboo, we don't want to hear that. Leave that on the black channel. We don't want to hear all that jigaboo music on there.
Look.
Turn that off, we don't want to hear that color fella. We don't want to hear that color fella. Keep that on that Jigaboo channel on the Jigaboo channel. We don't want to hear that.
This ain't no damn BT.
We don't want to hear those niggers. We don't want to hear those color fellas, the color fella with the purty mouth. We don't want to see that guy. Turn him off. That was a funny moment in the CMT history when they did that. I'm sorry I did that. But yeah, it was a great show. We run out of time. We might have to do an extra 15 minutes on off camera or whatever, because this is a great conversation. Thank y'all for tuning in to Soul Savages Radio, to people on the IG2 app. If you stay tuned on Facebook Live, we might do an extra 15 minutes because we got more. We left y'all on a cliffhanger. So if y'all listening on the app, make sure y'all stay tuned for that full audio, and we'll have the whole show because we're going to go another 15 minutes. We're having a great conversation. Y'all interacting with me on Facebook Live. I'm gonna get y'all some questions asked y'all. Have y'all seen some more stuff? But yeah, thank you for tuning in to Soul Savages Radio. We'll make sure you unplug us when we go on, or you gonna hear us on Adrian's show. But yeah, Savvy Heathen Talk is, we ain't getting no pace of Pino. That ain't happening.
See?
Thank y'all for tuning in.
Thank you guys.
Hey, EB.
Thank
you. Q-Lin.
Yes, sir.
Great, great show. Q-Lin, you're still getting
sued.
Shout out
to Monty Croft for tuning in. Thank you so much.
Oh, wow. Yesterday. But don't forget, Q-Lin, you're still getting sued. But anyway, coming up, dirty money.
No, it ain't. No, I'm not.
You think that if I had the chance to do it over again, I'd do something different, make better decisions, aiming from my ignorance, but I keep making the same mistakes before. I see the danger, but I go forward. I'm sitting here trying to keep my composure, knowing inside I'm broken and toe up. She got me gone, I'm on her like a drug. I try to go, but end up wanting more. Stuck in my head, vivid as a picture. Wanna be clean, but I can't get rid of her.
Give my all, you take it from me.
From me, girl.
And don't even replace it for me.
No.
I wish you just fake it for me.
Fake it.
I wish I could make you love me more. You can't tell I fucked with you, I needed you. I thought that you understood that based on how I treated you. I don't pay attention to the rumors that you feed into. Know you're missing something, I wish I was looking at you.